Hello, this is Ken MacLeod. Thousands of people around the world listen to these podcasts every week, just as you are doing now. If you find them helpful, please make a donation at unfetteredmind.org/donate. Your generosity helps us maintain and expand the website for the benefit of yourself and other practitioners worldwide. Thank you, and enjoy this podcast.
Unfettered Mind. Devotion.
All of these are viable ways. The one we're going to focus on here is the path of devotion. In the Tibetan tradition, we have several words. We have devotion, which in Tibetan is mugu. We have faith, in Tibetan for that is depa. And we also have the English word belief. The first distinction I want to make very clear is that I see faith and belief as opposites. That may not be how they're commonly understood in English, but the way that I find looking at faith, a helpful way to look at faith, is the willingness to open to what arises in experience. And Sharon Salzberg, most recent book, is called Faith. And it's actually a very personal book, in which she describes how she came to the same view of what's essentially the same view of faith through various incidents and challenges and interactions with teachers in her life. So you get a good sense of the things that that has shaped her understanding, and it's very good. I asked her, for whom did she write this for? And she said, for those in despair. And that fits, because often we have to be driven to despair in order to open to what's right there. Because nothing else works. Belief, on the other hand, is the, in my view, is the effort to interpret experience to conform to what's already inside. And so one often runs into a rigidity when people are functioning on the basis of belief and a very different kind of stability when people are functioning on the basis of faith. And that's something to look and observe. Now, in the Tibetan tradition, there are three kinds of faith. First is clear, open faith. It's a kind of radiant clarity. It is similar, but not the same as falling in love. But you know how when you fall in love, everything opens up. Everything is beautiful. it has that same quality. And, like falling in love, it can and does incite projections. It's important to cultivate. And that's what we're going to be focusing on today. But it's difficult. Because it cannot be contrived. It is essentially a clear, open appreciation. Though that language in English is, doesn't carry the emotional deeper quality of it. It's too intellectual language, but it is accurate. The second kind of faith is the faith of longing. This is an expression of our yearning. And it's in the sutras, there's a story of the always weeping one. He just wanted to be awake and to be present so much. He could never find the right teacher or the right instructions, and so he was always in tears. That's why it's called Always Weeping One. But he's an expression of this intense, heartfelt longing. And it can take different forms, longing for clarity, longing for peace, whatever, but it doesn't matter. It's all about longing for presence, basically. Now, this form of faith can be used to transform the energies of emotions into the clear, open faith that I just spoke about. And that's basically how it's used. The prayer that we did this morning, the far-reaching cry to the Guru, is an expression of that longing. And that's how such a prayer is used. And you feel this intense longing, you use prayers such as this, and there are hundreds of these in the Tibetan tradition, if not thousands, to give rise to this longing, and through really feeling that deep, deep longing, something begins to open up, which is this clear, open appreciation of the wonder, the magic, whatever you want to call it, of presence. And that's what gives rise to insight. An understanding. And the third kind of faith is the faith of confidence. It comes out of a rational appreciation of how things work. Now, when people say, how does this practice work? Or, why should I do this? This is not an expression of clear, open faith. It's not an expression of yearning. It's an expression of a desire for, I want to be able to understand this so I can feel confident in what I'm doing. In terms of actually moving you forward, confident faith, or faith coming from confidence, is not such a big step. But often, it's the first step any of us, it's the first step that many of us require. When we begin to understand, okay, this makes sense, then it lays the basis for that longing to start to arise. And out of that longing matures this clear appreciation. And the clear appreciation can also mature out of the confidence as well. So basically, the second two kinds of faith, longing and confidence, power the first, clear open appreciation. Now, this is a little bit of an aside, but may be helpful to some of you. In one way, these three kinds of faith are ways of transforming the three poisons. It's easy to see, for instance, that cultivating that longing is a way of transforming desire or attraction. You shift the focus of the desire from an object which you think is going to satisfy you to something which, you know, presence never satisfies you. It never satisfies your emotional needs, things like that. But you can use all of that energy to long for that, and it begins to transform internally. Faith coming from confidence is how we transform aversion. There is a very close relationship between aversion and the rational process. When you approach things rationally, it's actually a form of anger energy. You know about this, dear guy. That's why academics are such loving people. But you use that anger energy to dissect things and generate this basis of confidence which allows you to move forward to some kind of opening. Of course, that leaves clear open faith to be the transformative indifference, which is exactly what it is. I'm going to go into this in more detail this afternoon, but Guru, and possibly on Sunday, depending on how things work out, but Guru, Yidam, deity, protector, at first glance, these are, you can call them the three roots. They seem to be distinct. But at a deeper level, they actually define a spectrum. And one could say a spectrum of energy. From emptiness to form. So when one's doing guru practices, you're working at the with respect to the nature of things, the nature of experience, Dharmakaya. For those of you who know that term, the ineffability of experience itself. And the essential practice at the guru level is a practice called guru yoga. Where, if we put this into English, it would be guru union. Now, the guru is simultaneously a teacher, a person that you actually interact with, and a symbol of the ineffability of experience. Of this totally open, undefinable quality of presence. And in a practice such as guru union, you are seeking to join, I mean, how it's literally said, your mind with the guru's. Well, if the guru's mind is presence, then you're seeking to join with presence. And I want to make a point here which is often overlooked. We say join our mind with the guru's. But the word for mind in Tibetan and in Sanskrit is also the word for heart. And you may feel that this practice has a little different flavor if you think of it joining your heart with a guru's heart. It translates a little differently in English. Feels different, doesn't it? And when you do that, it becomes much less intellectual. Kind of like, oh God, what would that be like? Those hearts to actually join. I don't know. That's how it comes across to me. Maybe it comes across to you differently. So, in the booklet, page 9. This is a translation of the prayer to the guru that is used in the Karmakalpa Nyendro for foundational practices, groundwork, whatever. This is my latest translation. Actually quite light. And this is set in the whole context of practice with many, many really very beautiful prayers. And May I realize Maha Mudra as ground, the basis of all, yet free from such concepts as existing or not existing, and free from positing, negating, accepting, or rejecting anything in samsara and nirvana. May Maha Mudra as path become apparent, the path which completely surpasses destination, traveler, or path, which neither rejects the obscured obscurations of the obscuring, nor conceptualizes the realized realizer or realizer. May Maha Mudra as result become apparent, result which is the inseparability of basis and result, which with neither rejection nor attainment, but no conceptualization of goal, attainer, or attaining, not existing, yet the nature of all that is. Well, even just from that, you know, this is like just being there, nothing else. What I want you to do in terms of your practice is, and what I'm trying to do here is not actually give you formal practices in Guru Vyadam Protector, but the flavor, and working very directly with your own mind. With the Guru practice, you're really working with the nature of your mind. And that, of course, is inconceivable, inexpressible. The Guru, however you want to think of that, is a symbol of that ineffability of experience. Traditionally, in the Kagyu tradition, it's imagined as Vajradhara, the primordial Buddha. In the Nyingma tradition, as Guru Padmasambhava. Very frequently in the Gelugpa tradition is Jetsongkhapa. You can, if you wish, take any figure, living or dead. Many people take someone like Milarepa as their guru, in this sense. And with respect to that figure, symbol, cultivate these three forms of faith. And each of you will probably start at a different place. For some of you, I know from talking with you, you know something about that clear, open appreciation. And you let yourself feel it. And when you let yourself feel it, at some point you're going to feel what doesn't want to go there. What holds back? And now you've reached the edge of your practice, and that's where you work. You use that clear, open appreciation to open to those areas of you that don't want to open. Paul? For others, it's going to be about longing. And let yourself feel that longing. And you notice the prayer for the far-reaching cry to the Guru. It's, devotion pierces your heart. And that's how you practice with that. You let that longing go right through you, all the way. And you use the symbol, the Guru, whatever form you take, as a way of helping you to focus that longing so it can go right through every piece of you. So So, in a certain sense, you're completely destroyed by your yearning, your love. And, you know, that's a little intimidating. For others, you're probably going to start with confidence. How does this feel to me? Does this make sense? The sun's not a few questions about this. But you also, I mean, all of you are experienced people. There's nobody who's starting practice yet. You all know what you have learned or been able to do or understand through your own practice. That is the basis of your confidence. So you bring that to mind and you rest in it. And as you rest in it, you will start to feel the parts of you that don't really want to go any further. And say, this is fine, we can just stay right here. But you can't. So you use that confidence as a way of opening to those parts. Just making sense to me? I don't know, it's the first time I've done this. And if you find it helpful, you know, that's why I said last night, memorize this prayer.
Which one?
One on page 9. It's relatively short.
Okay.
Treasure teacher, I pray to you. Now, I chose to translate the word Rinpoche by treasured in this way. Because I think this captures emotionally the sense of it. We treasure our teachers. They are a treasure for us. And that just seemed to make more sense than precious teacher. I mean, which works, but doesn't work the same way. Maybe it's the alliteration that makes it better.
More active.
Pardon?
More active.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. And all in most translations, you're going to see that the phrase, Tibetan phrase, Jinji Lop, translated as give me the blessing. Etymologically, it's wrong. The word bless is from an old English word, blidzin, which is derived from to sprinkle blood on to make a sacrifice. And it came to mean to make something holy. The Tibetan word, the phrase itself. Chin is the idea of being given. And lope is like a wave. So, you know, when you give something, that there's an energy in that. So this is like praying for a wave of energy. And we've all experienced that. So that's why I've chosen, give me the energy. To let self-fixation go. Now, older translations that I did, and what's very common is the use of the term ego clinging, let go of ego clinging. I've moved away from that because ego is a very precise term in psychology. It's a very precise term in psychology, and it means the opposite, or has nothing to do with what ego has come to mean popularly and in Buddhist circles. And it's much more about self-fixation. And I find this we fixate on an idea that I am something, and that's what you're praying to let go. Give me the energy to be free of need. Now, interestingly enough, in several translations, this is translated. I'm not quite sure how they got there, as to know that samsara is futile. It's not what the Tibetan says at all. We have this idea that we need something from outside. And so we're always looking outside. But when we're always looking outside, we're simply reinforcing the duality of with the dualistic framework through which we interpret experience. I need something out there. So one way of moving away from that is we pray for the energy to be free of need. And there's a transformative quality there, which creates the conditions in which you can perhaps begin to rest in just what you are. Give me energy to let ordinary thinking stop. Now, the actual Tibetan is Chu Min, which means non-dharma. And I remember a conversation I had with Trungpa Rinpoche in the 70s. And I was still, not terribly fluent in Tibetan. And he said, what is the Tibetan for cutting through spiritual materialism? Which is one of Trungpa's books. He said, Chu Min Chukpa. What? Chu Min Chukpa, if you translate it literally, it means cut non-dharma. And so spiritual materialism is what is not dharma. Well, that makes sense. So this example of Trungpa's wonderfully poetic way of doing things. And that's what you're... So ordinary thinking is the kind of thinking that takes us into distraction. And it's a duller state of mind. You notice this isn't about stopping thoughts. It's about stopping thinking. There's a big difference there. Give me the energy to know mind has no beginning. In the usual translation, mind is unborn, which is fine. But, I don't know, somehow I wanted to try this translation. No beginning is like, whoa. Give me the energy to let confusion subside on its own. This is key element that when things are experienced completely, they release into awareness and become what they originally were, which is the energy of awareness. And it's our reluctance to experience things when they arise that prevents that process from taking place. So you're really praying for the ability to be able to experience everything. But then all the confusion will just release. It's actually very simple, just a little difficult. Give me energy to know that experience is pure being. Now the Tibetan here, and I took a little bit of a leap here. Sorry, I didn't take as much of a leap as I thought. I thought it was a different term. Everything that appears in experience, that's what the little Tibetan is. And pure being is... I cheated here, I'll be honest with you. So the word is Dharmakaya in Tibetan. And I usually translate Dharmakaya as the dimension of what is, but that just didn't fit here. But Dharmakaya is synonymous with Dharmata, which I translate as pure being. So I did that, but you know, it doesn't change anything in terms of meaning, but it's not absolutely never a translation. But again, this is taking the previous idea where you have the capacity to experience things so that they can just return to what they are. The next step from that is when things arise, you already know what they are. That is, you know experience as pure being as it arises. Then there's nothing to release, it just is.
Unfettered Mind retains all rights to these podcasts. If you wish to use part or a whole podcast, please send an email to podcasts@unfetteredmind.org.